In Titus chapter 1 and in verse 5, Paul wrote to the young preacher on the island of Crete and told him to appoint elders in every city. How was he to carry that out? Did that mean that Titus would go from church to church and select the men that were qualified to serve in those various churches on the island? Was there some kind of ceremony that was involved in appointing these men? Was he to lay his hands upon them? Was there something else that was to be done when they were charged with this responsibility? What does it mean to appoint elders in every city? We want to spend a few minutes talking about the appointment of elders. Turn with me to the 7th chapter of the book of Acts. In Acts chapter 7 and verse 10, it says that Pharaoh, king of Egypt, made him governor. That's Joseph. That's our word for appointed. Pharaoh appointed him governor. In this case, if you'll go back to Genesis chapter 41, to the historical account of when Pharaoh appointed Joseph governor, you will see that the appointing, the word appoint just means to put in charge of. That's what the word means. That when Pharaoh put Joseph in charge of the nation, it included selecting him to be in that role. In Genesis chapter 1 and verse 33, as Joseph interprets Pharaoh's dream, he then tells Pharaoh, "Let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt." Verse 37, the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his servants. Then Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this in whom is the divine spirit?" So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has informed you of all this, there's no one so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house." In this case, our word appointing, Acts 7:10, included selecting the one who would be in charge of the task of governing Egypt. However, turn now to Acts chapter 6 and verse 3. Before we draw the conclusion that appointing thus includes selecting, we need to do some more study. In the 6th chapter of the book of Acts, and in verse 3, when there were widows that were being overlooked in the daily administration, the apostles told the congregation, verse 3, "Brethren, select from among you 7 men of good reputation, full of the Spirit and of wisdom, whom we may put in charge or appoint over this task." Now you'll see that in this case, the appointing or the putting in charge was separate from the selecting. The brethren selected, the apostles then would put them in charge, and you see that down in verse 6. And so appointing elders does not necessarily include selecting the men who will function in that capacity. It is needful that we recognize this because there have been preachers who believe that was their role. They would say, this guy was qualified as elders, and I'm a preacher, and so I select and appoint them. That is not included in the word itself. That much we know. Over in Deuteronomy, in chapter 1, and verse 13. Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 13. Choose wise and discerning and experienced men from your tribes, and I will appoint them as your heads. Here's another example where the people did the choosing, selecting, based on certain requirements, but Moses would do the appointing. What we find as we gather the data in the New Testament is that churches selected their own representatives. Look at this verse in Acts 6. Here you've got the Jerusalem church. They've got a problem before them, a task that needs to be taken care of. Seeing that these women are not overlooked. And so the way it was done is verse 3, brethren, select from among you. And then certain qualifications were given there in that verse. Men full of the Spirit and wisdom, men of good reputation, whom we may put in charge of this task. And so these men would represent the congregation in the distribution of whatever they were giving these women in need. It wasn't the men who were relieving the women. It was the men who were representing the congregation in seeing that need was met, but the congregation selected these men as their representatives in seeing that that need was met. In 1 Corinthians chapter 16, we have a very interesting example. Paul was an apostle and had the authority to give orders to churches. We already learned early in the book of Acts that early Christians continued in the apostles' doctrine, Acts chapter 2 and verse 42. And here in 1 Corinthians 16, verse 1, he said, concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also. And proceeded to give orders or directions or instructions about when and how the collection that they wanted to participate in was to be handled. Upon the first day of the week, they were to lay aside so that when he got there, there would not be a need to go around collecting the funds. So here he said about how the collection was to be made. But now what's interesting is then, if you look in this verse in verse 3, when I arrive, so he's coming to Corinth. He wants the money to be ready. They had said they wanted to participate in this, but for some reason there was a delay in their actions. He's encouraging them to do what they said they would do. And then he said in verse 3, when I arrive, whomever you may approve, I will send them with letters to carry your gift to Jerusalem. Observe that the men who carried the gift, the funds that would be brought to the needy people in Jerusalem as representatives of the church at Corinth, they selected them. The apostle did not. It's as if he bent over backwards. I have the authority to direct you, verse 1, as to what to do, but as for your representative, the one to carry your gift, you decide who will do that. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 8. This is talking about the same collection that you read about in 1 Corinthians 16. And in verse 19, you'll see that, again, the representatives of the churches was chosen by the churches. Not only this, but he's also been appointed by the churches to travel with us in this gracious work, which is being administered by us for the glory of the Lord himself and to show our readiness. So while Paul was leading the way in saying that this collection was made for the needy Christians in Jerusalem, he said the churches chose their representatives. So you have Acts 6, and then you have this collection that we're reading about here, where the churches chose their representatives. When you think about the idea of selecting elders, and if we were to say, well, the preachers to select them, you have a difficulty, at least I do, harmonizing that concept with what we've just read, first of all. that even where there were apostles, they did not do the selecting of their representatives. Acts chapter 6 and 1 Corinthians 16. So why would a preacher be given that responsibility? Second thing, if you look at 1 Peter chapter 5, contrary to what some, they may not put it in words, but the concept is that elders are CEOs. They are not CEOs. They are shepherds. And you see in 1 Peter chapter 5, he says to the elders, shepherd the flock. This is verse 2. Shepherd the flock of God among you. And then you'll note in verse 3, not as lording it over those entrusted or allotted to your charge, but proving to be examples to the flock. The phrase lording it over, you can define it from the Gospel of Matthew. That's what the Gentile rulers did. They used their authority for personal gain, inconsiderate of the people. He says the elders are not that kind of ruler, not as lording it over, but they're to be examples. The idea of shepherd and sheep, shepherds do not drive sheep. Shepherds lead sheep. Sheep trust their shepherds and follow them. So when you're thinking about who's going to do the selecting of the men, the people are going to have to follow, who would you expect that responsibility would fall on with the shepherd-sheep analogy? It would be more reasonable that the people that are going to have to follow those shepherds would know the men that they can trust and put their confidence in to be their shepherds. And that accords with what we read earlier in these other verses, that the congregation selected their representatives. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, a third consideration along this line, who's to do the selecting of the men who are qualified to serve, you'll see in 1 Timothy 3, verse 10, these men must also first be tested. The deacons must also first be tested. That is, the elders are tested and the deacons are tested. By who? Here's Titus, a young man on the island of Crete, several churches. Would Titus know in each one of those churches who met those qualifications that follow in 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 5 through 9? Or would the people in the churches know the men who met those qualifications so as to test them? And so a preacher may come in and hold a meeting, for example. This has happened. And he'll say, well, this guy ought to be an elder, and this guy ought to be an elder, and this guy ought to be an elder. How does he know? The men are to be tested. Who's to do the testing? It's the people who can know whether or not the men that will be selected and serve in that capacity meet the qualifications. And so the idea that the congregation selects their leaders follows the pattern that we've seen in other representatives of the congregation and harmonizes with what we know of about the kind of work these men are to do. Well, if that's the case, what is this Titus 1:5 about? It says that Titus was to appoint elders in every city. In the 14th chapter of the book of Acts, and in verse 23, you have a similar statement, this time about an apostle and a prophet. It says they appointed elders for them in every church. Acts chapter 14, verse 23. So you may say, explain that to me. If the congregation is the ones who are to do the selecting, the testing, the approving, how do you explain Titus chapter 1, verse 5? Look at Acts chapter 1 and verse 18, if you will. Acts chapter 1 and verse 18. Peter is standing up in the midst of the brethren, verse 15, and he said, this man, talking about Judas, what does your text say? He acquired a field, the field of blood. Judas was dead when that field was bought. Judas did not acquire a field. What does Peter mean? It's the effect put for the cause. The field was bought with the betrayal money. He caused it to be done. He gave occasion for it to happen. You read that, you don't even stop to think about it. Judas did not buy a field, but he gave the occasion or presented the cause for it to happen. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 7. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, look at verse 16. 1 Corinthians 7, 16. How do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband, or how do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife? Can you save anybody? Did you die for somebody? Are you an atonement for them? Certainly not. The idea is don't send this unbeliever away. Don't divorce them if they'll live with you. You may be the cause of their being saved. But he didn't say that, although that's what he meant. You may say, be the cause of, the occasion of your mate being saved. Look at Exodus chapter 18. Exodus chapter 18. And look at verse 21. This is when they came out of Egypt, and Moses met his father-in-law Jethro and was talking to him, and Jethro was observing what was going on, and Jethro saw that Moses had a task that was just a difficult task for one man to handle, all the people coming to him for judgment. So he gave him some counsel about what to do. And in Exodus chapter 1 and verse 18 verse 21, he said, you shall select out of all the people able men who fear God, men of truth, etc. You shall select, Moses, men to do this particular work that we're talking about. Okay, now, look at verse 25. Moses chose able men. So Jethro says, you select able men. Verse 25 says, Moses chose able men. But, turn to Deuteronomy 1. Now, Moses wrote Exodus. Moses wrote Deuteronomy. You can't get a better commentary on what was meant in Exodus than Moses. Here's his sermon. And he recounts that incident. Now, look over at Deuteronomy 1:13. Verse 11 and 12, he talks about this burden that he was carrying. And so he said, verse 12, how can I alone bear the load and burden of you and your strife? Choose wise and discerning and experienced men from your tribes, and I will appoint them as your heads. Now who selected the men? Not Moses. Over here, select the men. Moses chose. Over here, Moses says, I told you at that time, you select the men. Look again here in Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 15. So I took the heads of your tribes, wise and experienced men, and appointed them heads over you. But who decided the wise and experienced men? The congregation did. You can clearly see in Exodus 18:25, when it says Moses chose, he caused it to happen. Men being chosen was the effect of what he did. That's clear, is it not, to harmonize those passages? So when you go to Titus 1:5, appoint elders in every city, is it that he personally was to appoint, or that he was to cause men to be appointed? You go to a dentist's office. I never heard anything like that. Oh, yes, you have. You go to a dentist's office, and there's a little receptionist sitting there. He says, I want you to pull my tooth. So she goes in the drawer, gets a pair of pliers, says, sit down right here. You say, goodbye. But you said, I want you to pull my tooth. I want you to cause it to happen. A coach says to his team, guys, win that game. He's not going to win. He's causing it to happen. And so we understand this figure. So when we go back and look at Titus chapter 1, appoint elders in every city. So Paul's writing to this young man. What follows? What follows is a list of qualifications that Titus was to teach. He said, verse 5, appoint elders in every city as I directed you. If any man is, we talked about this in a previous lesson. This is a to-be verb. It's what follows the verb are character qualification. Men of this character. Now, what's Titus' job? He's a preacher. He's to teach in the churches what kind of man is to be, so when the people selected their representatives, they would know the qualifications those men were to meet. Look in Titus chapter 2, verse 1. As for you, speak things which are fitting for sound doctrine. That's Titus' role, not to go select Tom and Joe and Paul to be elders, but to teach the churches. And in teaching them, first of all, that there are things that are lacking, he said, verse 5 of Titus 1, set in order what remains. Without elders, there's something lacking in the churches. There's something yet to be done. And here's the kind of man that's to meet that need. And so Titus 2:1, teach the things that are fitting sound doctrine. Titus 2:15, these things speak and exhort and reprove with all authority. So Titus was a teacher and preacher, and that's how he would effect the appointing of men in the churches on the island of Crete, based on the data we have in Titus 1. Let's go back to 1 Timothy. Here's another preacher. This time it's to the church at Ephesus. Once again, as he writes to the preacher, 1 Timothy 3:1. Now, had Paul been to Ephesus? Yes. Had he spent some time there? Yes. Did he know any of the people there? You know he did. But Paul didn't say Tom, Joe, and Harry are going to be elders. He writes to Timothy, and what he tells him is what the qualifications are for men to serve in this capacity. Beginning in verse 1, it's a trustworthy statement. If a man aspires to the office of overseer, it's a fine work he desires to do. An overseer then must be. And he began to talk about the kind of man he must be. What's Timothy's work in this? Go down in the chapter, down in verse 14. I'm writing these things to you, hoping to come to you before long. But in case I am delayed, I write so that you will know how one, or how you, either way it ends up at the same place, depending on your translation, how one ought to conduct himself in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and support of the truth. So if the church at Ephesus is going to be a pillar and support of the truth of Jesus Christ, which is what has in view according to verse 16, you've got to have the right kind of men serving as leaders. And Paul says, Timothy, I'm writing to you so that will happen. In other words, here's the kind of man to serve. What's Timothy's job? To teach that. Look at chapter 4, verse 11. Prescribe and teach these things. What things? The things he'd been writing to him about. In 2 Timothy, in chapter 1, the second letter he wrote him, in verse 13, retain the standard of sound words which you have heard from me. Would that include 1 Timothy 3? You know it would. So his job was to retain or hold or uphold, defend the standard. Not anybody can serve in this capacity. Hold the pattern of sound words would include the right kind of men to serve in this capacity. So in both letters to preachers, after instructions about elders, what you find is information about the kind of men to serve. And in those letters, exhortation to those men about their role of teaching. So I conclude appointing elders in every church based on all this data. Churches selected their own elders. Churches are more in a position to be able to test the man that will serve in that capacity. And then the data that surrounds this instruction, I've concluded that appoint elders means cause it to be done. That's the effect of his teaching, that men, qualified men, would be selected and appointed to serve in that capacity. Okay, so the congregation selects some men to serve in that capacity. And now they're going to be appointed. What kind of ceremony is to accompany their appointment? In the Old Testament, when priests were appointed, it was very clear there were certain procedures to be followed when those men were appointed. And those procedures were to be strictly followed. You do not have that in the New Testament. The very absence of that immediately begins to make you wonder if there is a set procedure to be observed when men are appointed to this, put in charge of this particular task. One thing I do know, we're not going to take the time in this lesson tonight, but you can go do your own homework if you want to. The word appointing, as you find it used throughout your Bible, does not inherently include any kind of ceremony. There are several different scenarios about appointing. It may involve a ceremony, but it may not involve a ceremony. We must not make the mistake that we've got some picture in our mind about appointing and insert that into the word. It's not there. And so, what was to be done? The closest thing we have is Acts 14:23. It says, when they appointed elders for them in every church, having prayed with fasting. There was prayer and fasting. Now, I know that in the rest of the New Testament, brethren were encouraged to pray. Not just about elders, but about everything. I know of no passage in the New Testament that enjoins fasting. Now, we can have a rap session about why they fasted. And I can tell you here why I think they did. You can tell me why you think they did. And when we get through, that's where we're going to be. What you think and what I think. Fasting was a custom of their day. Sometimes expressing sorrow, sometimes expressing solemnity. And so it depends on the particular circumstances. In this particular case, they prayed and fasted. If you're going to fast, what do you say? What's the point? And so I know of no injunction in the New Testament that encourages the practice of fasting to appoint elders. Now, what about this business of laying hands on the elders? Now, laying hands did accompany some appointments. In the sixth chapter of the book of Acts, in verse 6, and these seven men, they brought before the apostles, and after praying, they laid their hands on them. Now, you can see what a movie maker would do with that today, can't you? You can just imagine, you know, some kind of solemn ceremony, and maybe they put their hands on their heads or something. I don't know. I'm going to tell you what, you don't know what they did. You go study the term laying on of hands in your New Testament. Sometimes it talks about seizing men to put them in prison. Sometimes it talks about touching somebody that was kneeling down. There's nothing in the term that defines the imagined conception that people have that some guy standing up here, another guy comes and puts his hands on his head or something like that. It's not in the term. In this particular case, whatever they did indicated evidently the apostles' approval of these men the congregation selected, and that the apostles were ready to put them in charge of the task or appoint them. So these seven had their hands laid upon them. In Acts 13, verse 3, now the Holy Spirit is the one that set apart Saul and Barnabas for this first preaching journey. As you can see in verse 2, not the congregation, it's the Holy Spirit that set these men apart. And then it says, verse 3, when they had fasted and prayed and laid their hands on them, they sent them away. What was the purpose here? Suppose the congregation had not laid their hands upon them. Would they still have been authorized to go and do the work they did on the first preaching journey? Certainly. Did the congregation impart to them some spiritual gift? Absolutely not. Paul was an apostle. Apostles were baptized in the Holy Spirit. Again, it seems more like simply an indication of approval and support in the work that they were engaging in. Here's a case where the laying on of hands was not necessary. Certainly not necessary. It happened. What did they do? How did they lay their hands on them? I do not know the answer to that. In 1 Timothy in chapter 4 and in verse 14, Paul told Timothy, do not neglect the spiritual gift within you, which was bestowed upon you through prophetic utterance with, that is accompanied by, the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. There are people who take this verse to try to prove that someone other than apostles could impart spiritual gifts. I do not believe it teaches that at all. With here is an accompaniment with. And not that the apostles, the presbytery, the elders, imparted spiritual gifts. We know from Acts 8 the only men who could do that were the apostles through the laying on of their hands. And I don't know what they did when they laid their hands on you. But be that as it may, here we see Timothy had a presbytery lay their hands on him, possibly as an indication of support and cooperation. I do not know. But in each case, we do see the idea of approval and blessing of what was being done. If we're going to insist on the laying on of hands, as some may, we have some questions to ask. Who's to lay the hands on the selected man? You say, well, the preacher's to select. Why the preacher? He didn't select them. Congregation did. And if it's the preacher, does he have to be a full-time preacher? Can he be a part-time preacher? Look at the book of Acts in chapter 15. Acts chapter 15. And look at verse 35. Now, while Antioch already had elders, let's suppose they appoint more elders. In the church at Antioch, it says, Paul and Barnabas stayed at Antioch, teaching and preaching with many others also. There was more than one preacher there. So if selected men are to have their hands laid on them, is that Rocky to do that? He preaches. Is that Javier to do that? Is that Sam to do that? Am I to do that? Who is to do the laying on, the physical laying on of hands? In Acts 13, where we read about Saul and Barnabas, who laid hands on who? The brethren laid their hands. The brethren, not the preacher, Saul or Barnabas, Paul or Barnabas, but the brethren laid their hands on them. When these men went out on this first preaching journey. In Acts 6, the apostles did. In 1 Timothy 4, the presbytery laid their hands on Timothy. Not only do I need to know who's to lay hands upon the selected man, I'd like to know what that means. Where do you lay it on them? Is it on their shoulders? Is it on their head? Do you shake hands with them or what? And why do you do it? Because there's a ceremony? Show it to me. Where's the ceremony? Is it to indicate approval? Fine. Blessing? Cooperation? That's okay. Not opposed to that. If I hear these men have been selected, I want to shake their hand. Me or Wally or other men, I want to shake your hand. Approval? Cooperation? Not opposed to that. Why do you do it? That question must be raised. And so when you talk about the appointing of elders, as far as I know, there is no prescribed ceremony. There are no prescribed procedures that the Lord chose. We talked about that this morning. When the Lord makes a choice, I know of no prescribed procedure that the Lord chose. He said that elders are to be selected and appointed, but left some of that up to our judgment as to how we go about that. Now look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. And verse 12 and 13. We request of you, brethren, that you... Now this version says appreciate. Your version may say no. The word no has a wide range of significations in the Bible. And here this version has chosen to translate it, appreciate, which is, I think, the idea of the word, although they've translated the meaning rather than what he wrote. So he said, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord and give you instruction, and that you esteem them very highly in love because of their work. And so it's appropriate to pray for them that they do their work, and it's certainly appropriate that those men be recognized for the work that they will do or are doing in fulfilling the responsibilities that God has given them. They are to be respected for the work's sake, and that needs to be emphasized. And thus the lessons that we have preached up to this point, and the reason for preaching this particular lesson, is because sometime later this summer, if the Lord is willing and if things progress as they have been progressing, Wally and I will hope to suggest to the congregation some men that you have selected, names you have put forth as far as men who are qualified to serve. And if those men are selected and appointed, then they need to be known and appreciated for that work. We don't want anyone to look for a particular appointing ceremony of particular procedures. I know of none. We'll simply try to follow the divine information about the kind of men in teaching brethren who can serve, and then hoping brethren will put men to the test and select appropriate representatives.